dbkmediaservices.com.
You are listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk Podcast. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by SVCSportsZone.com and Triple Crown Sports. Now, here are your hosts for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk, Shane Combs, Matt Combs, and Jeremy Ward.
Hello, SVC fans, and welcome back to another week of the Triple Crown Family Fun Center SVC Sports Talk podcast show. I'm Shane Combs of SVCSportsZone.com, and joined as always throughout the fall here with my brother Matt and Jeremy Ward. And you know, Matt and Jeremy, I thought, you know, we have a lot to get to this week, a lot of good stuff going on around the SVC, but I thought we really needed to start the show with sending thoughts and prayers out to the Driggs family. Cindy Driggs is so much of the SVC family. They know that Cindy Harper was her name at Edina, and then went and married Jerry Driggs, and then Jerry passed away this week. And Jerry was a longtime assistant coach with her in basketball and worked in the Uniota wrestling program. Daughter Jendae was a player of the year there in 2011, an outstanding player. Son Levi is a senior now at the Uniota. Obviously, Cindy was an incredible part of SVC history, a 1,000-point scorer, back-to-back player of the year in basketball, and six-time coach of the year. And, you know, I think what makes this such a SVC-wide thing that needs to be mentioned is Cindy spent time with Adina as a player, Uniota Zane Trace. I want to say she was even at Paint Valley a little bit. So just, again, our thoughts and prayers go out to the family. Jeremy, I wanted to start with you being at Uniota there and just kind of giving you an opportunity to comment here and let us know a little bit about the Uniota family and community and how things have gone this week.
Well, like you said, our condolences to their family. And, you know, few people are blessed with the passion and the knowledge to promote competitive athletics the way that Jerry was and his involvement with the basketball and with all the things that he did for the Baptist Church and then building the wrestling program at Uniota. Just the influence he's had on a lot of the current coaches in the league that had some, you know, little story of the positive influence and the impact that he had. And it really shows throughout the community and their appreciation for everything that he did. Because, you know, we talked and talked about how the lasting impact of competition in sports is really, you know, the memories and relationships that you make with your teammates. And that, you know, I think they epitomize that in the way that they, you know, approached everything they've been involved with. And, again, thoughts and prayers to the family.
Well, Matt, you being a Uniota grad, I know you go way back to when Coach Driggs was there the first time around, and you've known the family for quite a while. Just your thoughts on the past week here.
Well, obviously, it's a tragic loss and really a shocking loss. Anytime, you know, something like this happens suddenly, it's a shocking thing, and you know, you really have a hard time imagining what their family's going through right now. But on this show, I guess we do tie everything into SVC athletics, and the one thing I thought about with Jerry is when I was a junior high student at Uniota and Cindy first came in as the girls basketball coach, they had what seemed like overnight success. You know, I mean, they went state tournament, regional final, state tournament, you know, right there in the first 3 years. And you really were drawn to their enthusiasm and their passion for what they were doing. And I think it raised the bar, quite frankly, in our league in terms of girls basketball for sure. And what people wanted to set their sights on in terms of accomplishment. And even for the guys, I mean, I sat there as a junior high student in St. John Arena and watching those girls play and thinking, man, I want to do this. You know, it was a motivator. And right. Cindy obviously is, you know, one of the finest coaches really in our county's history, in our league history. But as most good coaches go, a lot of their success is attributed to that person sitting right next to them on the bench, you know, as their assistant. In this case, it was her husband, Jerry. And I always felt like as I got older and coached and looked back, I always felt like Jerry really got it as an assistant coach, really understood what he needed to do and what his role should be. And obviously his work, like Jeremy said, goes way beyond coaching and with a lot more important things, whether it be his, you know, ministry in the prisons and his work with the church and, you know, just the overall helping with fundraisers, doing things to help other people. He was just a great guy, and it's a heck of a loss, a tough loss really to stomach. And, you know, you hope their family, it's a strong family. I know they'll get through it, but it's nonetheless, they have to be going through one of the most difficult times in their lives. And, you know, like you say, we really they're really in our thoughts right now.
Well, guys, that was really well said. And you know, it's great to see how the SVC family always is so strong in times like this. And as we get going into the show this week, I think we have something to start here with the SVC community that will be cheering on two seniors who hope to attempt to play at their sport's highest level. Well, we're talking about kids playing their sport at the highest level. We're obviously talking about the state tournament, the high school golf coming up this week. We're excited here in the SVC to have two local athletes. It's going to represent our league, and I'm sure we'll do very well in doing so. That's Southeastern senior Eli McKee and Huntington's Shania Irvin, who's also a senior. And we're fortunate enough here on SVC Sports Talk this week to be joined by Shania Irvin. And Shania, I guess the first thing I would ask you is you get into the game of golf growing up. I know with your family, your dad's done some golf coaching. He plays a lot of golf himself. Your brother was a two-time player of the year in our league, a state qualifier, I believe that was 2010, incredible baseball player in our league. So as you've grown up, at what age did you first get introduced to golf, and how did you kind of get into falling in love with the game of golf?
Well, I started when I was about 8 years old. My dad bought me my first real set of golf clubs for Christmas. I actually didn't like it whenever I first started. I was bad, and I knew I had to work at it to get better. So I got a little more serious in junior high, and then once high school hit, I realized that I could play with the boys, and then I decided to get extra serious about it, and that's where my love really came from.
Well, I thought the interesting thing is I thought about you and how much your golf game's developed is looking how good an athlete you are overall. I know watching you grow up, you've been in the basketball program at all levels, really good softball player. I know Huntington won their first school district title last year, and you were an awfully good bat in that lineup. And as I've watched you grow as a competitor, some of those same things come over to the golf course, not just with your physical ability to hit the golf ball, but just even as a competitor. I know here recently, for example, you started six over after four, I believe, and you're able to bounce back with some birdies and obviously go on to qualify. Talk to me a little bit about how not just your physical athletic ability, but just your mental aspects of being a competitor, how it's really helped you in your golf game.
Oh, well, the mental aspect's probably the biggest part in any sport you play. You've got to keep your head in it, because if not, you're going to get down and you're not going to be able to get back up. And I think golf's probably the toughest one with that, especially with you being by yourself. And I don't have any, I mean, if in softball, for instance, if I'm down, I can have someone else come pick me up. But with golf, I got to kind of do it all myself.
Yeah.
And it's a lot tougher that way.
Well, that's a good point. Let's talk a little bit about the actual golf game. When you're playing in the boys' league, where Huntington doesn't have the full-time girls' team, you're playing in the boys' league. You're playing from the white tees, and I imagine even with your length, you're still hitting a lot of mid-irons into some greens, and as you're playing with the likes of a Tyler Thompson, Eli McKee, Sam Calvin, guys bombing it out there, a lot of times you're probably not hitting it the furthest off the tee. Where now you come to the tournament, you're moving up to the red tees. I'd imagine you more than hold your own lengthwise, but I would imagine there's some things in your game you've had to work on, such as wedge play, short iron. Talk to us a little bit about the adjustment now into the postseason and what's gone into some of your practice sessions.
Oh, I definitely have to work on my short irons a lot more. I mean, from the boys' tees, I usually have to hit like a 3 hybrid or a 3 wood or something to catch me up, especially on those long par fives. But on from the red tees, I can almost hit an iron from some of the par fives, which is a huge advantage for me, and I can score a lot better. And just as long as my putting's on, we're usually good.
Well, I wanted to ask you, too, we were hoping to have Eli McKee on with you this week, and we just schedule-wise, obviously busy time of year as he's preparing for the state tournament as well. So I definitely wanted to take the opportunity to talk about his game a little bit. You, as being someone who's played in the Varsity Boys League, and you're a back-to-back SVC all-league selection, Eli's had an outstanding career, and he's looking to cap it off at the state tournament. For people around the SVC that haven't had a chance to see Eli's game, talk to us a little bit about how you would describe his game, what you like about it, and what your hopes for him would be at the state level this week.
Eli's a great player. He deserves every bit of what he's accomplished. He can, if you don't know him, you need to go watch him, because he can spank a golf ball, and his putting is phenomenal. He has an all-around good game.
Well, I know we are looking back here, going to talk about him a little bit more tonight. I know he's had some special rounds throughout his career, so we're excited about him too. Now, I also wanted to ask you about some of the other girls around the SVC. I know Westfall's been really successful the last couple of years, and they've been able to have a team. So you take someone like a Brianna Post. We've heard that name a lot on SVCSportsZone.com. Her team's had some success. She's had some success. But I wanted to ask you more in general just about girls in the state of the game. As you look to the future after your graduation here, do you see an opportunity for maybe the league to go the girls' route in golf? And what would be maybe your message to a younger girl that's getting into the game?
I'd like to see there be a girls' league. I think that would help a lot of younger players. But then again, it's really convenient for me to be playing from the white tees, because I think it almost helps me during tournament time. But I think it's a good opportunity to get to play with girls and get used to playing with them. And
yeah, I can see what you're saying there in terms of that advantage from the tees, and at the same time, but when the schools are having the teams, it gives a lot of opportunities, because where yourself or a Post or when Michelle Shams was in the league there, you know, you had the skill level to play from the white where a lot of other girls may not. So I can follow what you're saying there. And I guess that kind of goes into my last question. I'm not going to bother you with college questions and things like that, because I know you want your focus to be on the state. I know we'll have a chance to sit down with you and follow you on the website after the fact. But let's take you to this weekend here in my final question. It's Friday morning. I think it's 9:48, 10th tee for you. I know once you're there, you'll be getting ready to play a par four, and you're probably picking out a target and trying to hit your spot. And I know you'll be focused one shot at a time. But if I were to ask you now, looking ahead later in the week, what's your goal? What's some of the things you hope Shania Irvin can accomplish at the Gray course over a two-day period?
Well, I definitely want to finish in the top 10 overall. And probably another would be to make sure I keep my head in it, and to come back if I do tend to fall down like I did at districts, and hopefully get the job done.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're excited for both you and Eli, and we'll be following you here on SVCSportsZone.com, and best of luck to you this weekend.
Thank you.
Well, here on the show, Jeremy and Matt, you'll have an opportunity, as well as myself. We're going to be talking about Eli and Shania a little later in our final two-minute drill question. For now, we're going to move on a little bit in the show. And you guys will also have plenty of opportunity to talk football and volleyball, as always. But on the other side of the break, we prepare to crown league champions later this week that usually go a long way in determining the winner of the All-SVC banner. Well, guys, we're talking cross country now, and we have boys and girls. We'll be crowning a champion out at Paint Valley this Saturday. And, you know, cross country is such a hard thing to follow. It's so quiet throughout the year. You have some invites, but you have some schools strategically going different ways. And, you know, now as we get to the SVC meet, we finally get to see it. And I guess what I'm talking about was a great illustration this past week. We were running down on the farm on a weeknight, and then this past weekend we had the huge invite at Uniota. And I noticed I just kind of laughed as I was reading the things, because I believe Uniota was not at the down on the farm. And then I noticed Zane Trace was not at Uniota. So even though you were starting to get a lot of SVC runners together, you still truly didn't get a look. I know on the boys' side, the Dixon kid from Piketon's been terrific. His teammates, Varney and Isaac Dixon, Kane Dixon was the one I was talking about winning both of those events. So Piketon obviously is going to have a strong push to try to push a Uniota team that Richter and Magna and Griesheimer, and they're loaded again. Really, really good. Trapp and Newton from Westfall, Elijah Shanks from Huntington. Those are some of the names that jump out at me consistently on the boys' side. And then on the girls' side, obviously Zane Trace, very, very good again. 5 of 12 kids at the down on the farm were Zane Trace to finish. Rachel Ball, Southeastern, wins that one. But then Harkins and Cook and Uniota's got a real nice squad. It's interesting to see some of the young kids, a freshman, Haley Wright from Huntington, Clarkson over at Adena. The reason they're so significant is they start to take some spots. If they're able to fill teams, they start to take some spots and maybe move some people down in the scoring. So I guess I look, without Uniota Zane Trace running at the same time, you start to wonder, how will the Zane Trace boys challenge with Uniota? And then how will, on the other side, the Uniota girls challenge maybe the Zane Trace girls? So, and then everyone else in between. Before we get to the actual cross country, Jeremy, I guess I wanted to ask you first. You heard me mention coming out of the bump there about the All-SVC banner. You're someone that loves sports. You follow high school sports a lot. What are your thoughts on the All-Sports banner? How much knowledge do you think fan schools have throughout the league? And I guess, to put it bluntly, do you care?
That's an interesting question. You know, I think it reinforces tradition, you know, of a school's athletic program. And I think it's a matter of pride being able to hang that banner in your gymnasium. Maybe it's a more impactful statement for visiting fans, especially those outside the conference, to know how you stack up year in and year out, you know, within your conference overall, and not just as a basketball school, a volleyball school, a track school, whatever, but in, you know, the entirety of high school sports in your league, you know, where do you rank? So I think it is. It's a pride. It's something I think maybe more for the fans and the community to appreciate, and for athletes, you know, once they graduate, to appreciate going back in to the building and seeing those banners.
Well, it's just an interesting thing that we'll talk more about as we get to the end of fall. I know the debate out there is, here's a situation where you have one day, winner take all, and it's carrying as much weight in the All-Sports banner as, say, a league that goes 14 games or even 8 golf matches or whatever it might be. So I think it definitely makes for a good discussion. But let's focus a little bit more on the actual event here. I had a chance to talk to Paint Valley cross country coach Cheryl Nisley this week about the chance to host this year's SVC meet. Let's take a listen.
Well, Coach, opportunity to host the SVC cross-country meet this weekend. Just give the fans a little overview of what the Paint Valley course is like.
It's very scenic. It's very flat. I think we'll see some good PRs on this course, but it's not for spectators to see. You really kind of like have to sneak up on the mound to see the whole course. But as far as kids running, it's just like a beautiful course. It's very scenic. So I think to keep their minds off of the pain of running, I think it'll be a quick course for them mentally as a runner. So we're just real excited for the running community to come out and see this course.
I wanted to talk to you about that, because I think sometimes when you're out here as much as the two of us, maybe we take it for granted a little bit. I know other people talk about when they come out here for football or baseball or softball or whatever, they always talk about just the like you said, the view and just how beautiful it is, especially in the fall. Mm-hmm. there's also some characteristics of Paint Valley that are unique. You know, your wind and some of the cold. Obviously, once we get to the SVC meet, usually we're a little colder temperature than I think we're going to be come Saturday. How much factor of the wind and some other conditions in cross country can that play? And have you noticed that here at Paint Valley, Annie?
We notice it on the track, the wind in certain areas. But as far as running the course, there's certain little areas like in the back, you know, around the 2 mile marker, maybe a little bit more wind related. But usually by then we want some cold wind. So we usually enjoy getting some, you know, some of that breeze hitting us because we're starting to sweat a little bit. So the kids usually like it, like to have a little breeze coming around and hitting. But yeah, we feel it around like the around by Paint Creek when we start getting around the creek area. So we kind of enjoy it. So, you know, this it's been, you know, usually the season is pretty warm. So we usually enjoy that cool breeze coming in about mile two and hitting us at mile three.
Well, I have a couple more questions for you because there's one I really want to ask you at the end, but I want to build off that for a second. You talked about fan-friendly and how with some of the newer courses, sometimes that's tricky. I know around the southeast Ohio, some of the different tournament sites and stuff, you know, that's something you can go out and see the kids a little bit more. You know, as you look down the road here, you've obviously made so many improvements to cross country here. Is that something that this course has the ability to get better as it goes forward? Or what's some of the things maybe from a fan-friendly standpoint you'd like to see done?
Yeah, I think if, you know, it's about getting the people to the different areas to watch it. But I think with Site Mound, they did some reconstruction there, taking some trees out, and you can watch it. And it'd be nice if we could stand on the hill. If you can stand on Site Mound, you can see the whole thing. And I know back in the day, we were allowed to, and then there's been some new rules where you can't. So it's, you know, it's about that. The laws and the park rangers with some of that. So, but it's really hard to go out 2 miles to watch somebody run. And we are more, I think it's more of a true course than running around somebody's school. You know, I know you can still do that, but this is like, you know, they run it once. There's no copying anything. It's all 3 miles, and they just do it one time instead of doing a loop twice or, you know, going around something 3 times. And I think as a runner myself, you know, it's a mental game, and it's so much you know, positive.
Right.
A positive thing to think about.
Last question, I'll let you get out of here. You and I have been, you know, we've known each other probably for almost 20 years now, and I don't think I've ever known Cheryl Knisely other than as a cross-country coach. So when you see the growth, not just here at Paint Valley, but across the SVC, just talk to me a little bit about what that means to you personally and professionally.
The kids are getting so much faster, and our league is so hard. And like, if you can make the top 15 runners, you're almost, to me, that runner's going to probably get out of districts, even as an individual, if not a team. If you know, we've just got the best runners in the SVC right now. It really pushes our little school to, like, you know, want to be up there with the Division II schools, because we've got Division II and our Division III. But I just see how fast the times are getting and how hard the younger kids are running. And the times are just, like, crazy, so much better. Like, 18, 19s used to be able to get out. You can't get anywhere as a young boy running 18s and 19s. So it really pushes our kids to have set high goals in the summer. You know, it's about summer running. So I just, you know, it's possible. And I just think if you're in it, you know, it's, you know, Mr. Paxson told me they got to be in the program. You got to sell them into the whole aspects of the program. And, you know, sometimes you get lucky and you can get a team of that.
Well, best of luck to you guys this weekend as well as the postseason.
Okay, thanks.
Again, looking forward to this Saturday out in Bainbridge as all 8 schools come out. And, you know, Jeremy was just talking about some of the different impacts that'll have on the all sports banner and people's reaction to that. Well, Matt, I want to go a different route with you being an athletic director now. And I know Vinton County has a real solid cross country program. What are some of the challenges that that a school takes on when they're hosting the entire league in an outdoor event like this, and you're trying to run the event in a classy way?
Well, I mean, Coach Nisely hit on a couple of them there. You obviously would like to be spectator friendly. It's tough when you're when you have something that stretches over the course of 3 miles. We're very fortunate in Vinton County. We have, I think, the ultimate setup for cross country because we have a huge hill that people can go up on and watch and pretty much see the entire race. And it sounds like they sort of have that out there if they were allowed to use it, but maybe now it's looking like they're not. You always want to be spectator friendly. The other thing is, obviously, there's a lot of work that goes in. And a lot of that work falls on the coach. You know, the AD tries to help you or whoever, you know, you have to help you. But the coach ends up having to set up a lot of that because the coach is the one knowledgeable enough usually, you know what I mean, to set the course up and to know how to do it correctly. So as the coach is getting ready to coach, they're also having to prepare the course and get everything going. And cross country is, you know, probably a little bit easier than track in terms of coaching a league meet because track, you have to have so many volunteers to help you, you
sure.
know, with timing, hurdle crews and whatnot. But there's a lot that goes into it, you know, and I don't know out there if they have somebody like we do that comes in that does the timing by computer where you set up a camera and it prints it out for you as people finish. There's a person in our area that does that. It's associated with Bombs Page. They may have that person running their meet as well. I'm sure they have something like that. That helps a little bit in terms of, you know, putting people in order as they finish and things. But there's a lot of challenges that go into it. But I'm sure it'll be a really good day.
Well, there's no doubt about it. You wait all year, cross country. You're always wanting to kind of give it its equal coverage with the other fall sports. But like I said, you've heard me say it in the spring with track and then cross country in the fall. A lot of times the sport within is kind of a strategic thing where they kind of hold out and hide some different things. So looking forward to seeing how it all plays out. And we'll definitely be covering that on next week's show on the results. For now, we move forward to talk about how the SVCSportZone.com jinx, as Jeremy likes to talk about, just about struck again this past week. And we also talk about one of the great SVC games in recent history in any sport. Well, SVC football, Friday night number 6. It was probably the most exciting Friday night to this point in the season. Zane Trace and Piketon rolled. But I tell you what, the other two games, we had a near upset in another game that, to be honest, I don't even know how to describe. Jeremy, let's start with that one. Help me out here, first of all. I hear a lot of people calling it upset. I don't know if we know enough about Uniota and enough about Westfall. But nonetheless, it was an incredible win. Your thoughts on Uniota after that tough week we talked about, just the community and the football program. I want to say 1998 was the last time Uniota beat Westfall in football. Just kind of help me out here. Your thoughts on what you watched Friday night.
Well, I view it as an upset. Just given the recent history you talk dating back to 1998, it's hard to talk about progressing with your program until you start beating the teams that are winning championships and making playoffs consistently, and Westfall, you know, more than fits that bill. You know, I'm just thinking back towards the game at halftime and throughout the second half, you know, as it got really wild, you still didn't quite know if Uniota was ready to overcome, you know, that obstacle that had been in front of them so many times. But, you know, with a few breaks and the toughness to keep fighting, they were able to, you know, I think take a big step forward with that win. And, you know, they've got a lot of positives that they can build on, and you know, just a positive vibe that's going to get kids interested and keep their attention, and that realization that, hey, you know, this is what Friday Night Football is all about. You know, I want to be a part of that.
Well, a little follow up, real quick, Jeremy. I thought it was so important to the future of Uniota, not just this year, but in the future years, to see how many different people played a role. Uniota was able to get a lot of plays from a lot of different people. I know Hosley was involved, Strange was involved, Benninger, Spencer. They continue to get great special teams play in their kicking game. Your thoughts on how important it was for a lot of those kids to make those plays and what that can mean to them the rest of this year as well in the next year?
Well, you need that confidence. You have to have that confidence and the realization that it's just not one or two people that are going to, you know, have the ability to make plays. You know, even going back the week before with that game, you know, you come up short, but there's still a lot of big plays. And, right. And that's what makes it exciting, and that's what's going to, you know, pique interest and keep the kids coming out and giving them the, you know, that hunger and that desire to work and build, is because, you know, there's nothing more fun than scoring points and making big plays. I mean, that's what you do when you go out in the backyard with your friends or whatever, or goofing around. So that's the excitement that you need if you want your program to, you know, to progress in a positive direction.
Well, Matt, let's shift gears over to the other game. As you know, Jeremy likes to say over the past year, whatever, the SVCSportsZone.com jinx is the updates were coming into me, and I saw 3-0 and then 10-0 Southeastern over Paint Valley. That was the first thing I thought of with Jeremy talking about that. But in all seriousness, you take a weapon like a Dylan Miles, and then obviously the Perkins kid is lights out. Southeastern's a team that on one side's very dangerous. And then, as I've heard you say, you talked about the checklist and taking things one game at a time. An undefeated season, those aren't easy to come by. You definitely knew there was going to be some challenges. And obviously, to Paint Valley's credit, they answered the bell. Talk to me a little bit about your reaction, Southeastern and Paint Valley, on both sides of this near upset.
Well, first of all, let me say this. I coach baseball with Jeremy, and he's always been a little too superstitious for his own good. So when you start talking jinxes and stuff, but the Paint Valley Southeastern game was like you said, a battle. Here's the thing. I think with Paint Valley, when you are eyeing an undefeated season, I guess, and you know you maybe have that ability to do that, there's going to be somewhere along the line you're going to have a challenge like this. You know, it's either going to be because you don't play well, or it's going to be because somebody else steps up and plays really well against you, or maybe a combination. And I think it's a big growing moment for a team when they overcome it. You know, I think a win like this for Paint Valley could do a lot more than had they went in there and just clicked on all cylinders and won by 3 touchdowns, 4 touchdowns. You know, because eventually they're going to be a playoff team, I think. I think we all agree on that. And when you get to that level, you are going to be challenged. And what do they draw from? You know, if they've just been running every team off the field, you know, they needed a challenge, and they needed something to put a little pressure on them. And I think, obviously, it's probably a scary moment for them and their coaching staff a few minutes there the other night. But at the same time, looking back on it, I think they'd probably say, well, that's a good thing for us to grow on, a good thing for us to draw on later on, and when they're in the playoffs. Remember that night where it was tough and we had to do this and we had to overcome. You know, so I think ultimately it'll be a good thing for Paint Valley.
Well, and again, as I mentioned with Jeremy on the Uniota side of things, you look at the SVC scoreboard on the football page there, Paint Valley getting contributions from 5, 6, 7 different kids making clutch plays down the stretch. So, now, guys, we will return to football in our final in one of our 2-minute drill questions here and a little bit later in the show. Really interesting email this week that's going to have something to say from every school. But next, we honor a share of the title and talk about the upcoming second season for our league's most dominant sport.
Well, guys, as we get into volleyball, who better than the Siskel and Ebert of SVC volleyball, but to throw some questions you and Jeremy's way, Shane. But Westfall's win over Piketon, as well as Adina's 5-set win over Uniota, clinched a share of the title for Westfall. Uniota and Zane Trace will be heavy favorites to win twice this week. So if Huntington and Adina can knock Westfall off, we could have a tri-championship. So here we are in the last, you know, week of the season with a whole lot still to play for. Jeremy, you've liked Westfall from the very first time you saw them. You know, we've talked about that, and you've mentioned that on the show. I guess give us your thoughts on the Lady Mustangs as they're right here on the doorsteps of an outright title.
Well, you know, so much has happened since then, but Tuesday's match when Westfall came to Unioda, that was just a tremendous, tremendous high school volleyball match. And, you know, you really got to see the strengths of both those teams, and as well as, you know, exposing some of their weaknesses at the same time. And it was just two really talented teams going at it. But, you know, as the week went on, you know, Adina comes out and gets Unioto, and Westfall takes care of business, and it puts them on the brink. You know, I think very highly of the Mustangs, and they did lose a couple games this week, but they really have to be thrilled with what they've accomplished, but more importantly with the opportunities in front of them. They've got a nice cushion heading into the last week, already clinching at least a tie. They get to play two opponents to finish the SVC schedule that are, you know, Division III foes, Huntington and Adina, and those two schools are gearing up for strong tournament runs, I believe. So I think it's a great opportunity to, you know, for Coach Rogers to refocus her girls and, you know, kind of transition into the postseason, so to speak, and just kind of the advantages that are scheduled leading up to that. I just think that's going to be huge for the Lady Mustangs and the development to see how far they're going to be able to go.
Well, and Shane, you know, looking back on your preview article, you know, that you always send out at the beginning of the year, and then having the benefit of hindsight now and seeing the way it's going, what are your thoughts on some things maybe that you were right on the money on and some things that didn't go the way you expected?
Well, I think the biggest thing, Matt, is probably there were some things that I probably didn't get Westfall enough credit for, and that's probably what's thrown the standings around in the Lady Mustangs' favor. I think a lot of the other things, I was able to get a better read on some of the other teams, maybe just with Westfall moving up there, just dropping those teams a notch. I guess what I'm talking about a little bit, I'll start with Unioda. I think we all understood that Unioda is really, really good. I mean, this is a talented bunch that is going to be a tough out in the second season here. I've started looking at my all-league article, and I literally had six Unioda kids down that I'm at least giving a hard look at. I don't know. I could see maybe five kids making my final cut on that. They're that good. Led by Alexis Overly, but you know, obviously with Taylor Overly and Neff and Ward and White and Steinbrook, I mean, it just goes on and on and on. They're just so talented. And then with Zane Trace, if I had to go back to the preview article like you're asking, Matt, I probably really underestimated the loss of Delaney Spetnagel. Carl's been terrific. Strawsball's been terrific. The setting position with Ward and Pontius has been solid. Calhoun's really been improved, but I really think that third all-around weapon is something that Zane Trace has just had trouble replacing. Has probably caught up with him a couple times in some four and five set matches. And I guess Adina and Huntington, I had pegged pretty well, I think, with Adina, with Dawson leading the charge with the balanced attack of Bauer and Skaggs and Hutton. And you know, same way with Huntington, with Ingram, with Greg at Lytle in the back row is terrific. I thought Ricky McGill's been a lot better the second half of the year. She's really come on strong. I think with those two schools, I was pretty sure they wouldn't be able to win the league over a 14-match grind, but I thought they would play a big role in who did. Obviously, Adina just did that, and Huntington's going to get their opportunity here in the week to come. And then Piketon, Paint Valley, Southeastern, very solid volleyball teams when you get them outside the SVC. Even Piketon knocked off Huntington earlier this year. But I guess I have to go to Westfall to see my biggest goof, if you will. I messed up the most in probably not giving the Lady Mustangs their due in terms of their defense and their ability to pass and set the volleyball. There's no question that Curry and Phillips and Wallace at the net were going to be terrific, but I probably ended up selling short a little bit kids like Tackett and Williams and Arledge and even some of the role players like Shaw Smith and Fox and Walker. And I think what happened is as I watched them play, their ability to obviously come at you on the attack as well as their ability to serve tough really kept teams from bringing that same type of attack back to them. And and you're going to see a lot of kids maybe not show up on the all-league team from the passing and setting position of Westfall, but I really believe now that it's all played out that those have been the things that have kind of pushed the Lady Mustangs over the hump a little bit. So That's some really good volleyball discussion. I want to let people know, check out the Valero SVC standings, because that'll let you know everything we're talking about with Westfall chasing the outright title. I want to thank Chris Good, the Good Health Chiropractic Center. SVC Volleyball Scoreboards, where you're going to get all your information. And then JV, we had Uniota holding on in three to beat Edina. With an Edina win, we were going to look at a three-way tie with Huntington, Edina, and Uniota. But it looks like now Uniota, barring a big upset, is going to go ahead and win that outright title. Junior High, we have our junior high page. We've been putting all those scores, football, volleyball, on there as well. And, guys, before I move on, I want to go ahead and say that the soccer brackets were coming out. You'll be able to catch those on the website as well. I know on the boys' side, Zane Trace is a top seed. The Uniota boys, a two seed. On the girls' side, Uniota is an eight, and Zane Trace is a four. Those are just some of the ones that caught my eye. I think Southeastern Pike didn't have an all-SVC first-round match there. So you'll get all that information on the website. Well, we've reached the time to hurry things up a little. So, of course, I'm meaning it is time for our two-minute drill. Jeremy, why don't you take the lead again? Matt will put you in the middle, and I'll finish up. So here we go. Let's go to the hurry-up offense.
When looking at the volleyball brackets from Sunday afternoon, what is something you like for the SVC?
I like how well the league was able to avoid each other. You know, Zane Trace and Uniota have a difficult road in D2, but definitely an opportunity to get to a rubber match in the district finals.
Yeah, I agree with you, Jeremy. It's nice to see them spread out. I really like Westfall and Adina's chances to go to the regional. I look at Westfall's bracket, I think they'd have to really play poorly not to make it, quite frankly. And I look at Adina's bracket, they'd line up against the Fairland team, who I saw play in a lot when they actually lost to a Benton County team earlier in the year. Not necessarily strong enough team to beat Adina, and then maybe line up against the Nelsonville in the district finals, which, again, I just think Adina's better than. I really love the chances of Adina and Westfall to make it to the regional.
Well, guys, I love about four or five different things. First of all, in D2, you have to love Uniota's path. They avoid Athens. They take the two seed. They really quite honestly are the best team probably on out to that district final level. And then I love in Division III that Westfall, Adina, Huntington avoid one another. Matt, you make a great point about Adina and Westfall. I'll even throw in Huntington here. I look at their bracket with a Wheelersburg and an Alexander. Those are two teams they just beat over the weekend. So obviously more than capable of sending those three teams all the way out to the regional level. So top half the league there in terms of four teams getting an opportunity to do that's some good stuff.
When looking at the volleyball brackets from Sunday afternoon, what is something you do not like for the SVC?
Well, I'm hoping I don't steal this from Shane, but I don't like the fact that it's very likely that five of our teams will be playing at the same exact time on October 19th for a sectional championship. I do think this league likes to follow each other, and the way that's set up, that's going to be highly unlikely.
Well, we talked about we like the Division II matchups for Union and Zane Trace, but nonetheless, they are Division II matchups, and Division II is really, really competitive athletically right now in the Southeast District. And so I think, you know, you also have to worry about that a little bit for Zane Trace and Uniota. They're certainly capable of getting all the way out to the district final, like Jeremy mentioned. It wouldn't surprise anybody if they did, but it probably wouldn't shock you either if somebody knocked them off, because it's quite a gauntlet to have to walk through in Division II.
Jeremy, quickly, it's interesting you say that, because I've already been – the brackets haven't been out probably – we're recording here on a Sunday night. The brackets haven't been out more than a couple hours, and I've already been asked on that very thing if you and I would be interested in maybe covering some of the SVC teams the way we did Southeastern boys basketball. So that might be something to talk about a little bit later. But as far as answering the question here, I hate Zane Trace's draw. I know Athens is really, really good. That's not to say Zane Trace cannot beat them, but No, I didn't really want to see Zane Trace Unio to go head to head, but at the same time, those two teams have been pretty even throughout the year. So to see one team separate from the 2-4 seed there, that's a tough break for Zane Trace. I guess D3 wise, Piketon's been playing so well, but you knew with the three brackets that they were going to run into an SVC team eventually. Then I thought Paint Valley maybe treated at the 7 seed. Obviously, record hurt you there a little bit overall, but obviously they're a little bit better than maybe the 4, 5, 6. Still very capable of winning a sectional title. Well,
if the over-under number is set at 1.5 for number of SVC football teams who will finish the regular season with a winning record, what would be your prediction?
Well, optimistically, I'm going to go over. I really like the way Southeastern's been playing, and they definitely have a shot if they finish up 3-1 to get to that winning mark.
Yeah, I too am going to go over, and I tell you, even if it was at 2.5, I'd have to think about it, because I think Southeastern has a winning season, and I think Zane Trace could possibly win out. You know, you look at their schedule, I think they could possibly win their last four. So I'm going to go over on this one.
See, now you guys are going to make me feel like the SVC pessimist. But the guys, I'm going to have to go under. I've really thought about this hard. I've really looked at the schedules. I think what we've seen with, say, the Uniota matchup the other night, it's going to be so tough for a Zane Trace to win out or a Southeastern to win 3-4. I look for Piketon to get a Farmer back here soon, or an Afremder, their quarterback, who I saw what was that, Matt, week two?
Right.
He's a lot better. He's getting better, and he's obviously got weapons on the outside, and their running game's starting to come on. So I look for them to maybe knock somebody off. I think we're going to end up with two or three teams at 5-5. I'm going to have to go under on that.
What is your main headline for the upcoming state tournament appearances for Eli McKee and Shania Irvin?
Enjoy the moment. You know, I think everyone can appreciate the accomplishment of these two individuals as they realize a goal that they've worked so hard to reach.
Mine would be anything can happen. You know, you get to this level and obviously, you know, it's easy to look at and say, boy, it's tough at this level and it's challenging. But what happens if you're the player that goes out there and chips one in early or knocks in a 25-foot putt on the first hole and gets momentum going? So when you get to this level, you got to that level for a reason. You have a chance.
Well, guys, I really like those. I'm going to go with a cap to some unappreciated careers. And I guess the reason I go with that is I don't know that we've been able to step back and really appreciate what these two golfers have accomplished. Shania, obviously, in the boys league, a two-time OSVC selection, has done a lot for girls golf. And then I look at Eli, always was unable to ever win the player of the year, but he was second, fourth, and fifth. I think I have that right. And I always go back to September 1st, 2010. On that special night, Matt, this kind of goes with what you're saying with a kid of his talent. When he shoots the 30, makes five birdies, right, an eagle, and a bogey, and two pars, he shoots 30 with 13 putts, and he obviously a very talented kid. So, yeah, I think we're going to cap off some really good careers here, and hopefully they'll go out with a bang. Well, fans, we want to make sure that you like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, utilize the inbox at admin1 at svcsportzone.com, and then obviously you can always call 740-569-3254. And guys, we have an interesting follow-up. This comes from last week's show. The email was reading, the talk about stats on last week's show was interesting. I never even thought about stats and scouting going together. It seems like some coaches are overthinking it a little. I am a big volleyball fan in the SVC, and I thought this week's stats update was really interesting. It appears all eight coaches in volleyball participate quite well. My question for the show is, what do you guys think stands out when looking at the stats? How much does the stats influence all league voting? So, Jeremy, I'll ask you to take a look at the stats page there, and as you do so, looking at this first question here, what kind of stands out at you? And then the follow-up question there would be, how much do you think it will impact some of the all-league selections?
Oh, I'd agree. I think it's impressive just going through that. It seems to be a pretty complete list, and, you know, schools are represented, and you know, as far as the match is played, and, you know, it gives a pretty good picture of where everybody is to this point. In terms of it influencing all league voting, I think the coaches in this league are so good and know the other teams so well that, you know, all those stats might play a slight role. You know, I think their knowledge and their background knowledge of those players, teams, the systems that they run, how they performed in big games, how they've, you know, been able to handle pressure and things like that probably play a little bit bigger role.
Well, Matt, let me throw the same question at you. I know you do a lot of our stats, so I know you were telling me throughout the year, but really in particular this week, that there were some things about the volleyball league that, just as someone that's been around SVC for as long as you have now and now helping the website, there was something that really jumped out at you that you were impressed with.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've done the stats in most of the sports since we started the website, and there are certain sports, you know, quite frankly, trying to get stats in is like pulling teeth. You know, it's constantly trying to, can you get these to me, and you don't get them. Volleyball's been great. I mean, the volleyball coaches, like Jeremy said, you look at the list, it's a really complete list because all the volleyball coaches cooperate and get those into us. And I think it's an example, really, of one other reason, I guess, why you look at the SVC Volleyball League and say, this league's as good as it gets, really, in Southern Ohio. I mean, it sets the bar. And I think part of that is you have coaches that are on the ball with stuff. You know, they understand their responsibilities to their team, to the media. They're good coaches. They're knowledgeable. And you look at those stats, and obviously, you know, we've touched on it time after time how talented this league is. But, you know, in terms of the follow-up question of how it influences all league voting or whatever, I think the stats are more – I don't know how you feel about this, Shane – or Jeremy, but I feel like the stats are more of a fans thing. You know, it's a fun thing maybe for players to look at, for fans to look at, for parents to look at. I don't really know how much coaches really pay attention to it all that much. We talked last week. I don't think it's really a scouting thing for coaches, and I really don't know that it's an all-league thing for coaches. I mean, if you coach against teams twice, you're going to go into that all-league meeting knowing who the best players are. Because they've passed the eye test, so to speak. You know, you've seen them play. You know they're good. You don't need a stat sheet. You know, you don't need the stat sheet to tell you that Curry's a really good player at Westfall. You know, you watched. So I don't know how much the stats really play into that. Maybe as a separator, if you have two kids, you're just not sure, you know, or having a hard time. But overall, I think, don't you agree? I think coaches just sort of watch and understand and say, these are the best players.
I do. I do the all league thing every year, and I will say this: the times that I've been a head coach in sports, and I see a kid play twice, and I'm trying to follow what they're doing in my scouting and things like that, compared to when I've done the website, and I'll get out and I'll see probably the top four or five teams in this league. I bet there's been volleyball teams I've seen play six, seven times. I think stats are a piece of the puzzle. I think eye test is a piece of the puzzle. I think team success does factor a little bit in there. Sure. And then I think you take into consideration the depth. You've heard me say a lot of the different names throughout the show here tonight. But as I start to do that, I guess I look at things that – that separate kids a little bit, and stuffing the stat sheet is an impressive thing. You know, if you're listening to the show and you're not a volleyball fan, think of that kid on the basketball floor that, beyond scoring, constantly rebounding the basketball, steals, assisting on other buckets, taking some charges, doing some different things. And what happens is there's certain stat sheet stuffers, I call them, in volleyball. It just seems like every single night out, a Haley Carl's filling up 5-6 columns. A Kylan Strasbaugh is doing the same thing. Alexis Overly's a kid who's had some 20-20-20 games in terms of kills, assists, digs, very impressive. So there's a lot of kids that dominate their one aspect of the game because that's their role, either as a passer or as a player at the net. And then there's other kids that can completely dominate all the way around. And I guess, Jeremy, I'd throw this back to you because I really respect your knowledge of volleyball. I guess I've always been consistent. I've had a lot of emails disagree with me, and it's almost turned argument in terms of the last 3-4 years. But I've always tried to be a little consistent that if I come to two players and I'm back and forth a little bit, I have a tendency to maybe look at that kid who does stuff the stat sheet all the way around compared to that specialty player. Fair, unfair? What would you say to that?
Well, I understand what you're saying. I think that brings up the argument when you're talking player of the year, how are you defining that? And it is hard to argue. You know, I think there are only a handful of players in the league that really can impact the game at all positions. And it is a great point of debate. If you're only going to play 3 rotations or 4 rotations, then you have to clearly be dominant. You really, you know, can't afford any flaws in your game to overcome, you know, those, in this case, maybe 3 or 4 young ladies that can do it all the way around. You know, they can really perform offensively, defensively, passing, attacking, even serving. It's tough to go against that all-around player, but then you start to factor in other things when you're looking at player of the year. Does the all-around player with more support, do they gain in your eyes if they finish 4th in the league, 6th in the league? It's easy if they're on the best team, but you know, I think that argument is going to stem from people that believe, well, league champion, what was the difference? If their best player or their most dominant player made the difference, are they going to be the player of the year? Some people believe that that's, you know, the way it should be. I just think, you know, you talk about player of the year in our league this year, there are 4 or 5 kids that have some sort of argument, and you know, it just, again, a testament to the strength of the conference that you can bring so many arguments into play.
No question about what you're saying. I know as I started to put my teams together, I always do it a little bit differently. I'd written an article last year on the change of format and the way I believe it should be done. So that's kind of the way I go about doing it on the website. So I end up being able to name a lot more kids, getting 7 or 8 kids per team. And I put 3 teams out there. And you're right, Jeremy, that there's 5 or 6 kids that definitely at least had my attention in terms of giving them that particular look. And I guess that's even going to impact a little bit on where I go this week and trying to be fair and look. So great volleyball discussion. Definitely want to let the person know that it asked me today that Jeremy and I will take a look at the schedule and we'll talk a little bit with Bruce and DBK Media Services. And if the right situation would come about, was certainly not against it. I know the Southeastern basketball people really appreciated it last year. Obviously, never want to step on WKKJ's toes. They do such an amazing job. But obviously, they can only be 1-2 places at a time and only so many stations to put it on. So if we're able to get some kids some recognition, that's a possibility. We'll look into it. Well, really good show this week, guys. So until next time, for the great people at Triple Crown Family Fun Center, for Bruce Knox and DBK Media Services, for Jeremy Ward, for Matt Combs, this is Shane Combs reminding you to keep visiting svcsportzone.com, where we are 100% SVC 100% of the time.
You've been listening to the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. SVC Sports Talk is brought to you by svcsportszone.com and Triple Crown Family Fun Center. Join us next time for the Triple Crown Family Fun Center, SVC Sports Talk. And visit svcsportszone.com, where we're 100% SVC 100% of the time.